What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Art of Suffering podcast with Dalton Darnell. Today, we have a man named Josh Rangel. I do not know this guy from Adam. I was scrolling along there on TikTok, and this dude popped up with like 10 dudes in his garage freaking getting after it, working out. He's just posting a ton of content about his walk with Christ and his family. And just, if you have a TikTok, look him up. It's called Garage Church Fit, correct?
Yes, sir. That's it.
Sweet. Yeah, check him out, man. He's posting a lot of cool stuff. So I just thought it'd be a really cool conversation if me and him got to talking about life, love, and the pursuit of happiness. So Josh, tell the people kind of where you're from, man, and how you got started with the garage thing.
Yeah, man. Well, stop me anytime and ask as many questions as you want. So I grew up in Southern California, all the way through college, actually through high school. And then in college, I went to Texas Tech University on a scholarship. So that's like West Texas. So I tell people I went from like sand beneath my feet to sand blowing my face.
Right.
So West Texas, graduated from Texas Tech University in 2004. My wife is from a town here in Texas called Rockwall, Texas, just east of Dallas. And so we got married in 06. She moved me back to Texas. It's been a great move since then. And so currently we're in Rockwall, Texas, living out here, doing our deal. Mentioned the Garage Church Fitness. I just kind of back up. My dad was a pastor growing up, but it wasn't until I got to college and I met someone my own age that was like living out the gospel. He introduced me to a gentleman named Philip, who is the campus director of an organization called the Navigators. Navigators are really big on discipleship. And he said, "Hey, Josh, let me take you out to breakfast and bring your Bible." And I thought that was really weird at that time. And so I showed up and IHOP, and we ordered our food. He said, "Let's open to the book of John." And he's the first man to like sit down with me and ask, "Hey, what's going on? Who's the characters? What's the application?" And started a 4-year of discipleship. He told me, "Go into the dorms, find someone to read the Bible with." And then he said, "Now have that guy invite his friends, start a Bible study, teach that guy how to do a Bible study, do it again." Here's, we did an athlete Bible study. But there's this heart for discipleship. And I saw people get to know Christ, people who weren't going to church and learn how to just have relationships with people and live amongst them while introducing the gospel while we life. And so I share that because that's how Ford got into corporate America a little bit, did staffing and recruiting for 6 or 7 years, into my own business 12 years ago. Nutrition, health, fitness. I was working on my personal training certification, and this nutrition club model popped in front of me through a friend. Pretty quickly, it was a great way to build community within certain cities while helping people live healthier and active. And now when you help people live healthier and active, it just opens up life again. It becomes so much more than just helping someone lose 10 pounds. Free fit camps in a parking lot for people. That went from 4 to 90 people pretty quickly. Was like,
"Good grief,
what are you doing? I don't understand. I have no skills, but you're building these communities. People are getting healthy. People are building some deep relationships." Because I was pitching the vision. I said, I don't care coming from, how much money you make, your background, your race. We're going to love on people genuinely, and we're going to help you get to those goals. ISIS was really big. And so I kept on saying, man, if people are willing to blow themselves up for some cause so insane, where they're willing to destroy life because of that, what if we start building communities around people genuinely loving on each other? And so from that, we were able to duplicate some fitness and some nutrition clubs in the area. Well, about 2020, COVID hit, 2021, time alone was 5 a.m. in my garage. That was like my time, my quiet time. That's where me and God connected. I had a gentleman reach out to me and say, "Hey, Josh, I would love to start working out. Do you mind if I join you at 5 a.m? Really, like this moment, I want to say yes, because that was my time. That's the only time I had by myself. Well, anyways, good friends said, "Sure, come on."
Do you have little kids?
I do have three. Yeah. So oldest right now.
At that time.
So. That was, that's part of the reason I started working out. There's two reasons I started waking up early to do it. I've been working out early in the morning for a long time. One was I wasn't going to sacrifice my family for my own physical results. Like I can get up earlier. Two was because I was in the health and fitness world. I got tired of people telling me they don't have time. and they're waking up at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. So I'm like, get your butt up earlier.
Yeah.
So one part of it was not sacrificing my family. Other part was like, hey, I'm going to show people it is possible. This gentleman starts working out with me, and then he starts opening up about his marriage and about life and about his relation with God and how he wants to grow. And then he makes this comment along the lines of, I was just looking for an older tour. And so I'm 44 years old. I'm like, I'm not old. What are you talking about? He was in his younger 30s.
Bro, you don't look 44 at all.
Well, thank you. And so that started just a great relationship, walking through life. And then before you know it, other people were asking, can we join? And it's really, it became an outreach for my neighborhood. And so guys that weren't going to church were showing up in my garage. And when they're in the garage working out, like, we get after it. It's not like posts on TikTok or from our Friday mornings, kind of a hit workout. But Monday through Wednesday, we have a solid, like, we're getting after it and pushing guys. And if they start feeling sorry for themselves, I'm known to make a quick comment like, dude, suck it up. I don't feel sorry for you. This cool relationship where we're opening up and talking about life, and people are opening up and sharing things that no one else knows about them, which is allowing freedom to come. And COVID hit. Right before COVID, I was doing something in my garage called Beer and Bible. And it really was, hey, bring a beer and let's read the Bible together and let's see what God does. And it was just my way of, can I get men who are isolating themselves and struggling, but afraid to tell anybody about it, into a closed garage where the walls of a church are down. Like, there's no like walls that you have to put up. Like, we're just real men. Let's get after it. And so that was really cool, kind of the start of this whole thing. And so fast forward to where we are right now. Started a, said, well, might as well, guys are asking. I'm running out of room in my garage. So Friday mornings, let's open it up to anybody that wants to come. 30 minutes getting after a workout, usually a full body hit style workout. Guy threw up this morning, which was pretty fun. And we spent about 20 minutes in prayer and just praying for each other, praying for our communities and praying for our families. Just a cool little bond is starting to build right here. And it's to like social media. So the social media thing is just optimistic guy. I like positivity. And there was a time, I don't know how many years ago, people kept on saying there's nothing good on social media. There's like, it's so negative. It's trash. My mind works was like, as anything else in life, right? Anywhere you go, there's positive and negative. So how come let's be the positive light? Yes. Started, like, if you go back onto my social media platform, like, I would sit there with a Bible and just say, hey, verse of the day, and just read it. I argue that. They can't argue scripture. And so led to kind of where I'm at right now. God continues just to challenge me. Hey, do you trust me? Be faithful. And, you know, you're on social media. I'm sure the first time you started doing things, it's a little uncomfortable. You're not sure what you're doing. What are people going to think? Mm-hmm. Just another platform to reach people who maybe aren't being reached.
It's the freaking trolls, dude. They're trolling. That's it. That's all they do. They just troll. I was literally, before you jumped on, reading some Instagram comments for the rope company, and this guy's trolling. He's trolling. He's never even ordered a rope. I went on the website and looked it up. He's never even ordered one. He's just running his mouth, you know, and that's the nature of the world, and that's what the enemy wants to do to scare you off of it. And
that's right.
I'm telling you right now, dude, like, the kind of stuff you're doing, that's what this podcast is. That's the goal, is to walk with the people who believers don't walk with, where a guy can come and listen and go, man, if Dalton is unworthy of the King and still knows Jesus and God still changed his life, well, then God can change my life. Because for me, dude, like, the cookie cutter version of Jesus that is preached is what turned me off of it. Because the world that I lived in was really hard. I was like, man, I don't know how to be a good person. I don't know how to love these people. I don't know how to be not angry, you know? And until I started walking with believers inadvertently, like, it wasn't on purpose. I like literally worked with them. You know what I mean? I didn't come to know the King because I was like, dude, Christians can be like this? Like, you cuss, you know, like, you drink beer sometimes. What are you, you can't be a Christian and do that stuff, you know? And it's just total BS. It's not real. That's not true. And one thing, I shot an episode this morning with some people, and we were talking about The Chosen, and I never watched The Chosen. And I started watching it, and I went through some stuff, and I'm sure we'll drift into that at some point in the podcast. But like my buddy told me, he was like, all the disciples, everybody on earth is like one of the disciples. He was like, you're Peter. You're like Peter to me. He was like, you need to watch The Chosen and watch Peter, you know? So I've been watching it, you know, and dude, they are just freaking, those disciples are just more lost than last year's Easter egg. Like, I just watched the episode last night.
A book on my shelf. There's a great book I read. I might have gave it away. The 12 Ordinary Men. Goes over each disciple and who they were and how they were these ordinary men.
That makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Because they're sitting around a fire last night when I was watching it, and they were bickering, dude. Like, fighting. I was like, this is who he picked, you know? And my biggest thing, when I got read Ephesians 2, and the first three verses talk about how we all deserve wrath. And then in verse 4, it says, but God in his infinite wisdom and mercy saved us. I was like, okay, so we're all garbage. The only reason we're not garbage is because of the king. And we're all too weak to do the job. It's his strength that makes it work. And so I started looking at all of my shortcomings as this opportunity to, one, learn, and two, show who God really is. Because Dalton's not good enough for nothing. And so, I don't know, it's just really cool to me that you've invited these people in, and I can totally relate to the 5 o'clock being the your time thing. I got a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I get up at 4:30 and go to the gym, and that's the only time of the day that somebody's not. And I take my kids to work with me every day. So somebody's crawling up my leg all day long. I would have a hard time inviting somebody into that first hard. 2 hours. You
yeah.
know?
I'm a selfish guy by nature.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But that's an amazing thing you've done there with that. And I tell you, I want your opinion on this. And this is the thing. This is where I had, just like internet trolls, okay? I have a very hard time with judgmental believers, and I have a very hard time with new believers who are judgmental just because they just learned the word. You know what I mean? So I want you to speak to it from the perspective of a guy who literally, you're spending all of your time out in the world. Talk about that a little bit. Like, you don't just surround yourself with church people and then just be okay.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. So within the last 8 months, I had a little change. So up to the last 12 years, I've been doing nutrition clubs. And what I loved about these nutrition clubs, it's a brick and mortar location. People would come in, get smoothies and get teas. I get to do meal planning with them. Because it's not a transaction, like we're really big on the relationship aspect with our customers. In fact, I tell the people who run my other clubs, you never know what someone is coming in from or what they're going back to. And you may be the only smile or piece of hope they see that day, right? You just never know who and what is going through something. So it's our way. And because of that, and because we're so big on the relationship, knowing kids and knowing anniversaries and knowing everything about our customers, we're shop, right? And what I mean by that is we know everything going on in town. Everything, all the rumors, all the gossip. And so it allows us, because of that, to be part of the world, as you're talking about, but yet be who we are in Christ and maybe speak a different truth to that person. So sometimes that might look like just asking them, hey, do you mind if I pray for you? I don't know what you like. I just, let me pray for you. I mean, no one's ever told me no. Being bold and asking a little deeper question. When a guy's talking to me about the struggles of him and his wife at home, being a little more bold with that guy and saying, well, tell me, man, like, how are you contributing to this? What's one thing you could change to make this situation better? Right? And because guys don't get talked to that way. And what I find out is when you talk to men directly or people directly in love, not judgmental, respond really well because it's so uncommon, right? Because either they're judged, you're doing this wrong, that's why your wife doesn't like you, or the questions are never really asked. Oh man, I'm sorry it's going through that. It must be hard. Right, yeah. But when you can sit and you're asking God, hey God, if there's something I can do to speak into this person right now, please give it. And you hear him say, well, ask him about his porn addiction. Hey man, dude, trust me. Right now in your life that you think you need to get rid of to maybe help this relationship get better. And you know, you can always tell once someone try not telling the whole truth and you can boldly speak into that truth, received well. And so that's thing I've really taught the Nutrition Club and what I've been doing in my business. I did a, going back to my college days, we did something called the Insider Study, really about how you can relate with those community people around you and not become that white person. I go to church, chest out, I know more about you, I'm better than you because I go to church on Sundays. Once I used to call it my rogue ministries. Once you can be in the streets with the people, living with them where they're at, the relationship equity with them, which allows you to speak more into them. Really cool, because people's like, man, so within the last month, I actually just joined staff of a church. The job at this church is to build community groups, as we call them, out in the community, on campus, get into the word and whatnot. So it's been a kind of crazy transition because I went from this world where the lost was coming into my clubs, which allowed me to speak into them. And now I'm teaching, now I'm on the reverse side, helping people build groups out in their homes to reach the lost in the neighborhoods. It's a fun change. It's been an amazing change. We can get into that story if you want. Completely God deal. I wanted nothing to do with the church staff. I like my rogue ministries. I like being in the streets. I like asking me, hey, you must, I'm just a guy making smoothies that love Jesus. And that's why I'm talking to you. Right? Man, you work for a church. You love Jesus. So you have to talk to me, you know?
Yes.
You're mine.
It's funny how often Christ comes up in normal conversation for me, just because I'm hunting it. Like I'm looking for the chance, not in a way to like be over the top, but it's just like if somebody asks me a question, I've come to this point in my walk with Christ, and I would say I've been a Christian since I was a kid. My granddad was a pastor, yada yada yada. I've been walking with Christ for about 10 years, legitimately having a heart for seeking his truth. Okay, there's a difference between I'm baptized, I'm a Christian, and I am hunting what the King wants. What do you want from me? And since starting this podcast, used to, I would like decide based on who was talking to me, whether they were going to get my believer answer or my worldly answer. And I quite literally, one time I asked my wife this, she was like, our firstborn son was in the NICU. And she was like, and I was just happy everybody was alive because almost everybody died. It was a slam miracle. It was pretty wild. And about 2 weeks into the NICU, she asked me, she said, how are you okay? And she was, to my knowledge, she was a Christian, right? Not necessarily a believer, okay? And I said to her, do you want the answer I would give a believer or do you want the answer I would give a normal person?
It's good.
And she was like, I want the answer you would give a believer, you know? And I've been thinking about that a lot recently, about the last year, because now you're getting the believer answer. Like, I'm just going to shoot both barrels, baby. Just here we go. And it's interesting to me because a guy like you who is in the world, but not of the world. And the confidence that is required to walk around and boldly love people the way Christ loves people. Not everyone does that, man. You know, like even if you go to the church house, it's uncomfortable for me. I don't like going there. I don't like it. I don't feel comfortable. And if you've listened to any of the podcasts, like especially the solo episodes, like I'm dumping it, dude. I'm like, I am struggling with drinking. We're talking about sexless marriage. We're talking about the stuff. And I cuss and I am rough. I am a cowboy by nature. But I feel like God made me this way to walk in the world with people who aren't believers and then love them the way I feel like Jesus loved me. You know what I mean? But I commend you, dude, because the stories you're telling, they're really cool. Like, you working for that church, that's like the perfect job for you.
So, I mean, it's just a cool story how I got here. God, they actually started with a customer that brought in a job description. And it was for an off-campus / discipleship pastor. It was one of the moments I felt to say, you need to apply. And I was personally doing everything I could not to apply. I mean, I was calling.
Straight Jonah and the whale,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, absolutely. It was exactly that. Because it said 5 to 7 years experience. I'm like, well, I don't have 5 to 7 years experience, so I shouldn't apply. Some guys I knew, guys that discipled me, some guys that know me well, some pastors I know around town. And they're all like, without knowing each other, hey, look, you really need to apply for this position if you're being pulled. So I sent it to my wife thinking she would deny it. It sounds exactly like you. And so that was the first step.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. It was really the first step of God doing some incredible things. But even a lot of things he had to do in my own heart. Story through the process, interview went well. I didn't get the job. And I don't know if we're like, man, I really like what they're doing, what our church is doing. So we had one system and we're moving to this whole discipleship shift. And for our church and the size it is, for our leadership to make this shift of something they've been doing so good for so long, speaks to volumes of like who and how they're following Jesus. So I walked away thinking, oh, that was pretty cool. A couple weeks passed and I really felt, I had some good friends taking us to Mexico and my wife and I were at the airport. I remember telling her, I feel like I should email the church and just say, whatever you guys are doing in the community, help me. I wanted to enroll my business alongside you guys and help you get into the community. And back to what we were talking about earlier, there was part of me was like, man, what you guys are trying to do, I don't know if you need another seminary pastoral / clean version pastor in this role. I think you need to know someone that knows the streets. I need to email them. And I was like, I'm done. I'm not emailing them. So, 2 weeks passed and it was a moment that the call from the church and I knew exactly why they were calling before I even answered the phone. Chills throughout the body and they're like, hey, some things changed in the job description. They want to talk to you again. And so I went to this job, this interview. I'm like, I'm going to tell them all my thoughts. I thought church, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be real. They're going to know who they're going to get. And again, like I said, I'm not trying to get this job. Getting stopped halfway through an interview. And they're like, let me tell you about Rooted is the program we're rolling out. I walked away from that interview thinking this church identified an issue, a problem. People aren't being discipled the way we need to, right? And my heart really is, I love seeing people say, but give me that person 2 to 3 years down the line. I want to see how they're walking with Jesus. Mm-hmm. Walked away. There's no way I'm getting that job. And so long story short, here's something in a week and a half. Now it's 2.5 weeks past that point. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing with my business next year. If this goes any further, right? Trying to plan all this. Two burdens. One is I didn't want to bring my family into a ministry role because there's a lot of junk in ministry. I saw it with my own dad being a pastor. I don't want to put my family around that. And so I was having a lot of great conversations. And again, everyone without knowing each other said, hey, you're not that situation. You're in a different situation. You're built differently. And so that kind of got taken away, but there was this other thing on my shoulders, which I didn't know what it was. Saturday morning, I'm backing out of my driveway and I get this prompting, and these don't happen a lot. And I write down on this piece of paper in my truck, Josh, you need to forgive, give up all bitterness and let go of all anger. Hand it all over to me. And at the bottom of that paper, I wrote, whatever it is, I surrender. Thinking about this all day long and not sure where this came from. I'm not sure what it means. Play sports. And so we're in the sun, hot Saturday, 4.5 hours. We get home on a Saturday right after 4 o'clock and our church has a 5:30 Saturday service. I told my family, hey, we're going to the 5:30 service tonight because we weren't going Sunday for some reason. Saturday night, they had a guest speaker, Art Kendall. Kendall's an older gentleman, and his whole message that night was, don't miss the anointment of God by holding on to unforgiveness, bitterness, and anger in your heart. I remember thinking, oh my goodness.
Smoked him.
So I went home, talked to my wife, shared all that was going on. And it really was like, it was things I thought I had forgiven people for, but I was holding on to parts of it for my protection.
Mm-hmm.
That after that, it was like all these small people would come to my nutrition club and say, "Man, Josh, man, thanks for the conversation. Have you ever thought about ministry?" Like, no clue what's going on. So that moment right there is one of those moments where God just really worked and wove and broke his way my heart and put himself so real, where at the end of this process, my wife and I were in the bathroom and she asked, "What are you going to do when the church makes an offer?" Kind of looked at each other and said, "It would be so undeniable and so disobedient at this point to say no." Mm-hmm. So it's been a fun transition. God's doing some really cool things. I never thought I would enjoy it that much. The hardest thing for me, people ask me, like, what's been like going from entrepreneur in the community to on a church staff? The part for me was building communities. And that, I mean, that's what I've been doing for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And discipling people, that's been easy. The hard part is when people are like, "Hey, this is Pastor Josh." I'm like, "Wait, no, I'm not a pastor. I'm just a dude.
Hold up, bro.
I'm just doing a dude doing my job." But even in that moment, yeah. God continues to say, "Look, just trust me," right? And mm-hmm. through this process of 8 months, he revealed some insecurities in my life. So it's refreshing to hear you say it looked like a confident man, but I know the insecurities I used to battle all the time, right? Where God starts doing things in your life and you're like, "Oh man, it's all God. And then it gets to this point where it switches to like, "Oh my gosh, I can't maintain this level anymore. I can't hold this yes. anymore." Where it goes from like, "I'm trusting God to now I have to maintain it." Mm-hmm. Always a setback and just been a pattern in my life. And it kind of just God revealed that. And now it's really to a point where like, "All right, God, look, you're calling me to have this conversation. I'm going to have that conversation." Mm-hmm. Continues to work in some incredible ways, deal through the business and at the church. And so it's been, God is real. I love hearing you say, "I'm just going to be myself and God's using me where I'm at right now to reach people that I can relate with." Mm-hmm. Exactly what it is. And the beautiful part about all that is God's continued to sanctify and work through you to make you the man that you're designed to be.
Yes.
That was a pastor I listened to, Matt Chandler. He's going to be 50 soon. I've been listening to him for years. When I was 30 years old and thinking,
"Hey,
man,
hang on just a second, Josh. Hello?
Hey.
Okay. Thank you so much. No, you're good. Have a good one. Sorry.
Good. You're good." And Matt Chandler was at 30 years old thinking, "Man, God's really speaking to me. It's incredible. I can't believe who I was in 20, where I'm at right now." And he goes, "And I was 35 and it was the same thing. What? I thought I was mature at 30. Now I'm at 35 yes. and I was a knucklehead at 30. And then he's like, "Now I'm 40. Right. And thinking I'm matured as a Christian, thinking what a knucklehead I was in my 30s and 20s. He goes, "I'm sitting here mm-hmm. at 50 years old thinking, man, I'm pretty mature. God's really spoken. He's moved a lot in my life," thinking what a knucklehead I was all the way up to this point. It's just this continued process of God refining our hearts. Likes mm-hmm. me because how sinful I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny you talk about that because this is, so about 6 years ago, I got diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis, a small joint arthritis. So hands, lower back, feet, it's freaking miserable. It's silliness. No reason, really. Maybe it's because my mom gave me vaccines or too much Tylenol. Who cares? It's my cross. So we named our company 310 Ranch Life, and this is our brand. And the 310 is Philippians 3:10. And it says, "For our determined purpose is to come to know the King and share in his sufferings in order to be transformed into his likeness." Okay, so our purpose here is to know God and to suffer to be like him. And so once I got the arthritis, I didn't really understand what suffering was. Like, I had been in some uncomfortable situations, sure, but almost all of them they went away. It's like you do a really hard workout, or like cowboying, you get cut in the long circle and you'd have to ride 25 miles and everybody else only rode 10, you know, and that day would suck, but then it was over. The arthritis has been more like every single day is going to suck and you have to trust me anyway. And it's I've had to adopt this mentality of it is good. The suffering is what makes us like Christ. And that's what we're here to do, man. My foolishness, and dude, we're talking about like I sit on this, the imposter syndrome with this podcast is unfreaking believable. I can't even imagine being a pastor. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would have such a hard time because I'll sit on this, like I did an episode a couple weeks ago where I talked about not taking the world home to your family and not letting the stress of your job or your career or just somebody cutting you off in traffic. And then you go home and you're inconsistent with your family. That afternoon, I went home and snapped at my wife. And I was like, what's wrong with me? Like, what? Like, literally, you know the principles. You know what to do. But unless you are depending on Christ literally second by second, you cannot do it. You cannot do it. And it's funny because what you're talking about, and how old you say you were now? 44? It's unbelievable. God, I hope I look like you at 44. You're 11 years down the road further than me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the way that I'm looking at it here is it's a continual transformation of who you are over your entire life. It's like your initiation into manhood is not the day your dad slaps you on the back and says, you're a man now, son. It's all these little moments of learning that create a man. You know, like a lot, it's a long journey into being an actual man.
Well, this is what popped in my head when you said man journey. But more of my story, 2013, when I started this business, my wife and I were like so disconnected. We got married in 06. First 7 years of our marriage was just ugly. I blamed her for everything. Everything was her fault. She didn't understand. I mean, I was ugly. 16. So I started my business in 2013. It took off really fast. The first slap in the face. First warning was, hey, you're doing a great job leading your team. Awful job leading your family. I started changing some things, trying to get more time in the Word, just, you know, trying to figure out what that meant. 16, I was on the couch, my two boys, old, maybe 3 or 4 at the time, which means my second son would have been 2. We're sitting next to me on the couch. We were watching sports or something on TV, just having guy time. I were having a spirited conversation in the kitchen. Tell you what it was even about, but here's what I remember so clearly. Gets to me. Said something. I don't know. Again, I don't remember what she said. I just remember clearly turning to her while she's in the kitchen, looking her dead in the eyes and telling her, I hate you. Snapped on me with my two boys right there next to me, out thinking, who have I become? Still, I had sin in my life that was unconfessed that I was hiding from everybody else. But that week or shortly after that, I walk into a buddy's office here in town to talk about business. And I was so overwhelmed with that, everything that was kind of going on that was stirring in my heart that I just kind of started confessing everything I had about pornography and everything else. Being in his office, and he just showed so much grace. It was one of the God things too, because like, hey, someone that you can talk to, I walked through this myself, there's hope. I became a man. That's when I feel like I became a man. When I confessed it all, I confessed it to my wife, and it wasn't easy. I wish I could tell you this moment of ration and everything, but it wasn't. Caused some major pain. And this was years and years of damage I was doing to myself that I didn't think it was affecting anybody else until it came out in front of my boys to my wife, telling her I hate her. Oh, the side of that, man, God did some really cool things. And here we are, I don't know, 7, 8 years removed from that. And my wife and I and our family are just in a really good spot. It's incredible. And my challenge to your viewers, like, if you have unconfessed sin that you know, but you're like, ah, man, I can't release that. Go open up and tell someone you trust. The process of healing. Satan wants nothing to do but isolate you. And that isolation, why do you think no one knows? It's destroying you and destroying relationships around you, whether you know it or not. When you say, like, here confidently now, be close friends, if I have to worry about what people think about me, less.
Yep.
I have no clue that my wife and I were in. So there was a program called Reengage that our church does. And she, my wife's someone that had to do with counseling ever, right? She's just an introvert. She's an amazing woman. She came up.
Sounds like my wife.
Yeah. And she came up to me at some point after all this and said, I think we need to do Reengage. I asked her, like, what changed? Like, what made you want to do Reengage? She said, I started seeing you respond in ways that you've never responded before. I started seeing you act in ways I've never seen you act before. And it scared me. I was like, man, that was just a God thing. Because at that point, when she did that, I really made a resolution where, if going back kind of relates, I never changed anything about my situation that I can control, where I continue to serve him and give my life over to him. Yes. And so I was willing to deal with any thorns, with any issues, with anything I can't control, because I know that somehow he's using that for his good. The patterns in our marriage just stopped changing. I wouldn't argue the way I want to. The funny part about this whole story is, I love sharing. So this program you go to, one of the first classes, they have you rate your marriage.
Yeah.
And so we put a 3 down on the sheet, not knowing it. We both were being so generous together, like to each other. Uh-huh. So I share that only because, I mean, that's where we were at. See where we are at now, a total God thing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just felt like I needed to share that because, man, I'm not this confidence or this hope, and I don't have struggles now. I want to make that clear to people, because I remember sitting in church and people saying things about people on stage, like, oh, they have it all together. And I would see behind the scenes, person wouldn't show themselves behind the scenes. That makes sense. They would try to keep the wall.
Yes.
And that's when things come crumbling down, because you can't do it.
No, you can't. And I heard a pastor one time, dude, this is interesting. Actually, that's a lie. I didn't hear a pastor. My dad did. And then he told me, but he said, everybody looks at their sin like this, right? Like, these are my sins. And he said, he thinks that God looks at your sin like this. So this looks unsurmountable. You're like, look at all this garbage. I can't do anything with this. But then if you take that and you turn it like this, you're like, okay, this is the one. We're going to knock this thumb out. And then when it goes, we're going to knock this one out. And recently, the enemy stronghold that the king has, bro dog, I'm talking about, he dropped a bunker buster on this one. Like, my wife literally was like, she came to me and was like, I'm not going to tolerate this. And it was the drinking. And this was a couple of weeks ago. And I've struggled with drinking my whole life. And I haven't drank, I don't even know when it was. It was maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. Haven't even thought about it. It was absolutely annihilated. Well, God did this with me. He did the same thing with me with porn a long time ago. I say a long time ago, it might have been 4 or 5 years ago now. And it's something that everybody in our generation, my generation, has struggled with. It's just like, if you were growing up on the easement of social media, you don't got a chance. Like, your dad didn't even have the weapons to give you, because he didn't even know, dude. The enemy was just there and winning. And I came to this point to where you would watch porn and then you would feel guilty. You're like, why am I doing this? And then you spend the whole next 3 days feeling like total shit. Cause you're like, what am I doing? What is this? And then it would happen again and it would happen again and it happened again. And I finally got to this point, and I have a very good friend of mine. I've had him on the podcast, and we've talked about porn like a billion times over the last 15 years, where I was like, God, I don't want to feel guilty anymore. Like, make it to where I don't feel guilty. I don't like feeling like this. And it was like he said to me, you just have to change. You have to seek me. And you don't, do you ever feel guilty with me? No, I don't. Like, if I'm seeking what God wants, I don't feel guilty about anything. Even if I'm kind of like harsh with somebody or like stern. If you're in the wrong and you freaking get on a guy and you're just a total a-hole to this guy, you feel guilty afterwards. You're like, oh God, I shouldn't have said that. But if it's like one of your good friends that you have a relationship with that needs somebody to freaking hold them down and go, hey buddy, that's not it. I never feel guilty about that. I'm like, all right, Lord, that was you. The thing about the drinking was, though, dude, like porn is like a nasty thing. Like you feel bad with that. You're like, oh God, this is icky. You know, the drinking never felt icky. Just felt good about it. Honestly, like I was like, dude, this is my vice. This is what I do to calm down. And everyone in my family drinks. My wife drinks. Not anymore. She quit with me, which is, that's key, fellas. Your wife quitting is very helpful. But the porn thing was like this, you're hiding. Like you're hiding. You don't want anybody to ever know that about you or that you ever did that. And so I found quitting the drinking wildly more difficult. And it doesn't, what's funny about the porn stuff is that started getting wildly easier as my relationship with my wife got wildly better. Like she almost became a weapon that God used to annihilate that. Was like, look what I've given you. This is real. It lives in your house. And if you love it, you honor it, and you respect it, we can do big things right here. And, but the drinking, it took a lot, dude. I got a work call about 3 weeks ago, and most of the listeners that listen to every episode have probably heard this, but listen to it again, because I got to work. My wife was out of town. I got a work call on a Sunday, and it freaking pissed me off, dude. I was so mad. And I've said in the other drinking episodes that I wasn't the kind to go get hammered. You know what I mean? I just drink, and I was a pro. Like, I could drink 6 or 12 beers and have no trouble. Like, I can just walk around like a normal human. And that work call chapped me, dude, and I got pissed. And she was on the way home from the beach, and I got to drinking. And I'm just sitting at the house playing with the kids, drinking. And then we go to family dinner, and I'm drinking at family dinner. And I just got slammed drunk, dude, and just was a teetotal asshole to my wife, like a monster. And we woke up the next morning, and she wasn't in the bed. First time this has happened in 8 years. And I was like, where is Kara at, you know? And so I go out in the house, and I find her, and I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing in here? And she woke up, and she was like, I am not going to tolerate that behavior. Like, I love you. But last night, you talking to me like that, that's not a damn thing, you know?
Good for her.
I was freaking heartbroken, son. I was like, the only thing in my life that is good, that God has given me to endure this misery that we are called to walk through, I was freaking a monster towards. And it was like, I fasted for 3 days after that. I just, right then, I told myself, I was like, my flesh has to die and I'm going to starve it to death. And so I prayed and got in the word, and dude, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Day two of that fast, which I'm sure you've probably fasted before, but man, day two, you feel like a champion. Like really, you don't eat. Day one sucks. Day one's pretty tough, but day two and day three are, you feel really good. And I was listening to the Gospels on audiobook, and I got to Matthew chapter 12, where he talks about when you cast a demon out of a guy and he goes in the desert to rest, and then he comes back to that vessel with 8 of his buddies, and if you let him back in, you're worse off than you were before. That is what I was experiencing. I got on this stinking podcast and told these people I was going to quit drinking, and we cast the demon into the desert. And then he'd come back 7 days later with 8 of his buddies. And I did it twice. We had 16 of them suckers in there just whooping my tail like I'm talking bad. And so that final time, you know, I was literally sitting in my shower, dude, and I was praying to God. I was like, Lord, destroy my flesh. I mean, come down here and freaking annihilate me. And I said this on the last episode. Do not ask that lightly.
Right.
Do not ask the king to come destroy you lightly, because boy, he's coming. And if you want it rooted out, he's going to rip it out of your heart and destroy it. And you better not want it anymore, you know? But gosh, dang it, man. That's powerful. That confessing thing is something that I've never had a lot of trouble with. I'm pretty much an open book. Like, if I'm feeling guilty or bad, I'm just like, it's all out there. You know what I mean?
Man, that's good. That's good stuff. Thanks for sharing that. Joy, man, I just found out, like, there's just layers to it all. Might have been porn as the crutch, and you start working on that, and God kind of helps you get through that, and then you realize, oh, man, there's only something else I'm running to now, and then you work through that, and you realize, oh, well, really, the foundation of all that is some kind of insecurity I have, so God started working on that. It's just, he's constantly after removing things so we can see more of him. And it's just, but it's a battle. It has to be a battle.
It is. Well, because the enemy doesn't want it, dude. Yeah, he doesn't want to give up ground. And dude, when I started this thing, dude, I ain't never in my, like literally after the drinking fiasco and during the fast, I literally was begging God. I was like, please, can I not do the podcast? Please. Like, just so that sorry sack of will leave me alone. Like, just, can I have a break, you know? And God was like, quit being a candy ass. You know what I mean? Oh, like, yeah. Get after it, dude. I'm serious. I was like, oh my gosh, please. He just, the enemy just, if you're out there doing what the king wants you to do, the enemy is freaking coming. And it sucks, but it's good. It's what we're supposed to do, you know? So let's talk about being a dad a little bit, man. So tell me about your kids.
Three kids. My oldest son is 13 years old. He's going into eighth grade. Great kid, man. He makes some good choices. He's a kid that has friends in all types of people groups. He's hanging out with the athletes. He has friends in a robotic club. He has friends at church. I mean, it's just, he... so many different types of groups. Jesus, sports, soccer. My son Paxton, he's 10. Video games, great athlete though. Loves basketball and football. And my daughter, who the boys know, she's my favorite out of all three of them. Princess, just an incredible smart girl. Wise, daddy's little girl. Great athlete too.
How old is she? Okay. So 13,
13, 10, and 8.
8 and what? Okay, man, you got them. You got them lined up. Nice.
That's good. We're in a, you know, my favorite stage was when we got everyone out of diapers, and that was huge. Yes. And then when they got to, like, out of the cabinet and feed themselves, that was huge. And now we're, like, in the sweet stage where, man, we can go out on a date night and leave them home with the oldest for an hour or two, and it's just a fun stage. And then they're all like, you know, eighth grade, he's navigating hormones and body changes. And we're having some cool conversations about what it means with to treat women with respect. And, you know, that you're going to look different than other guys in the locker room. And here's why we're going to look different, you know, and starting to set a foundation up for him that he can build off. They're all different, right? So then oldest is really obedient. Paxton's a stubborn kid. Mm-hmm. Myself as dad, like jumping on him more than the others. And that's really allowed me to say, well, maybe I'm not understanding him completely. And how can more patient understand and meet him where he's at? And then Ellie is just a good kid. So it's like, and parenting's challenging, right? You can't, all your kids are going to be the same. And I think you have to understand who they are to meet them where they're at. Loving being a parent, being a dad, just a great call.
It is freaking cool, dude. It is tough. It is tough for me. I don't think I truly understood what Jesus did for me until I had Wiley. Because, boy, I ain't hanging him on no cross for nobody. You know what I mean?
I know.
I ain't doing it. Yeah. I wouldn't do it for my mama.
That's right.
I'm not kidding. That's right. And God hung his up there for me. That's crazy. That's crazy to me. But I tell you what, so I'm pretty far behind you on that regard. I got a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I find the 6-year-old, man, it's just a precious, precious thing. My goal with him is preparation. And we've just got into this spot to where, like, he's wanting calluses and blisters on his hands. He wants his hands to look like dad's. And he's out there on the pull-up bar every day trying to freaking, really, I think he's just trying to get blisters. I don't even think he's trying to work on pull-ups or swinging or nothing. But I spend a lot of time looking at other people's kids and looking at other men and other fathers and husbands, and not from a critical eye, but from the eye of, okay, what can I learn here? You know, I would say my firstborn has a big motor, and he is pretty obedient. He's a pretty soft kid. Like, he wants to be a good kid. But how do you get to 13 years old with a kid that is what you described? You know what I mean? Like, what was your, did you have a plan, or are you just like following God's principles?
Man, people ask me that too. Doing to raise your kids. Here's what I've done from day one. I pray with them every single night before I go to bed. I've been praying individually, Lord, just bless my kids with good teachers and good coaches, like things I can't control, Lord, that's in your hands. I'm trusting you with that. Friends in their life that love you. And God's been faithful for that. Very thankful for that. I have a goal each week, and I name it a goal because that's what it keeps me in track, because life gets really busy, is to sit down and read the Bible with them 3 times a week. Sometimes it's 1, sometimes it's 3, sometimes it's more. And you know what? It's not like it's, I want to paint this picture like we all sit around on the couch and this is kumbaya moment. Usually I have smart comments. I have one jumping off the couch and I have one attention. I try to be intentional with it. It's not like we spend an hour. Maybe sometimes it's 5 minutes, sometimes it's 20 minutes. It just depends on what we're talking about and how the conversation's going. So know and realize that's not on me. I mean, I'm trusting the Holy Spirit moves through their hearts. Last year, 2 of them got baptized. My oldest baptized the year before that. And so really cool to see how God worked. Really try to be intentional in the terms of showing them where God is working in my life, but also point out where God's worked in their life. So example, big soccer, my oldest is a big soccer player, and he'd go to a local junior high and we'd go kick the ball around. Well, there was this period in the summertime where the fields were just always packed. Go up there and there's just no room. I was busy and he wanted to go play. I'm like, Jay, I'm not going to drive over there. You know, it's going to be packed. We don't have room. He's like, Dad, let's go. And so I'm just going to, get in the truck. And I prayed out loud, God, if this is your will, and I would love to hang out with my son today, just make those fields clear. Get over there. And there's literally no one on the fields. It's been one of those moments where I'm like, oh, cool. Coincidence. Hey. But I wanted to point out, oh my gosh, Jay, do you remember what we did in that driveway before we left? He's like, yeah, we prayed. I'm like, what do you think this is? This is God answering prayer right here. A couple of years ago, I found out about this daddy-daughter dance in town in the city, and our city holds. It's a really cool one. I found out from someone. I came home and said, hey, you want to go to a daddy-daughter dance? And I was all excited. I think spirits up. Yes, let's get dressed up. And that's when we can go on a for a date night. Like, she was all about it. Like, yeah, we can do that before. Yeah. And buy tickets that night after I tell her, and late to the game, they're all sold out. I remember going back into her bed and said, Elia, I am so sorry. They're sold out. You just see the chill expression of her disappointment. I said, hey, let's pray about it. And so we pray, God, look, if it's your will, I'd love to hang out with my daughter, to spend some time that you've given us together, and provide tickets. Literally, as I walk out that door, I get a message in my inbox from a guy that works for the city. He said, hey, Josh, just thinking about you, would you want tickets to this daddy-daughter dance? Using that and going back in right away, and just again, right? Some people just think that's coincidence. A lot of people let those moments go. And so I try to be intentional with those moments. Like, Ellie, what did we just pray for? She's like, tickets. I'm like, guess what happened? So I hold my kids alongside of me, even like when I was going for this position and God was lining things up, like sharing those stories. If you look at, actually, I'm reading through Deuteronomy right now, and Moses continues to say, like, be diligent, be careful, right? But he also says, continue to teach your kids and your grandkids what God has done us from the Egyptians, right? Don't let your kids forget that he parted the sea, about the plagues, about how he provided in the wilderness. When he gives you the promised land, don't get all relaxed. And so I really try to be intentional with enrolling my kids and showing my kids how God is working in our lives right now.
Mm-hmm.
Basically it. I have this rock solid plan. And it's not like I have this parents that have lined out.
Yeah.
Prayer and what I just talked to you guys about. Get them to church. Obviously, I love church. People are like, we don't need church. I'm like, dude, you're going to meet family and friends, and they're going to create friends at church. I lean at is don't make church the only way your kids hear about Jesus. It can't be. You can't expect the school systems to educate your kids, and you can't expect the church to teach your kids about Jesus and be the only source for that. Your home is your biggest ministry purpose. And you have to, as a dad, be the biggest influence in their lives. Because we know, man, more time at school, they're going to spend more times with their teams practicing and in the locker rooms. And you know there's going to be things that are brought up in those things that don't line up with our values. And so you, as a dad, better have an influence in the life and in the home before the world takes over. They're going to be influenced somewhere. You get a choice of influenced by. Very kind of diligent about that side of it.
That's a failure on my part. My scorched earth with the church. We haven't found, or I haven't even been looking. I did when we lived in Oklahoma, but when we moved back to Alabama, I was like, I'm good. And I had somebody comment on a video that was like, you really need to come to our church, you know? And I was like, this weekend, I was thinking, I was like, man, we should go check that out. And what's funny is, during that fast, my son was watching Bluey, and I was sitting on the couch next to him, and I was reading the Bible. And he was like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm reading. He was like, what are you reading? It's like, I'm reading the Bible. He's like, why are you reading the Bible? I was like, well, to get closer to Jesus. And he paused the TV. He was like, well, I want to be closer to Jesus. Will you read it out loud? And I was like, yeah, sure, I guess, you know? And so I started reading it, and I pray with him, but that's not, and I've read him some Bible stories, but I don't ever read the kids' version. I read, like, you read David and Goliath, old son. He's like cutting Goliath's head off, you know? So I'm in there reading it, and I'm like, freaking David cut off Goliath's head. And he's like, yeah, baby, got him. You know, I'm like, this is vicious. And it's something that I've had. Like, I have no trouble talking with my son about Jesus, but, and we pray together on the way to school, you know, for our teachers, and a lot, we pray for mom a lot, but that's something we haven't done, is go to the church house and had a good experience there. And we lived in this, the parsonage of a church in Oklahoma, like they were renting it out. And so we rented it. We literally lived in the house next to the church. And played on the church playground because it was in our backyard. And the pastor would walk by and he'd be like, hey, y'all coming on Sunday, you know? And I was like, dang it, man. Like, there's no excuse here. And I really liked that guy. I really liked listening to him teach. But when my granddad was a pastor, when he died, I pretty much hung it up. And, you know, we moved a lot for work and all the things. But that's something we haven't got embedded in, is a community of believers. And a couple of weeks ago, I felt like, this probably a month and a half ago, actually, I felt God like, you need a group of men. And I was like, okay, so I need to go back to church. And I kind of felt God go, I don't know if that's really what I'm talking about. So I started a men's group on Tuesday nights, and I cook hamburgers, and everybody comes to the rope shop, and there's seven or eight guys that come. And that's been really, and I take my sons, both of them, they come and eat hamburgers and listen to us, you know, share hearts and burdens, and it's freaking brutal, dude.
I think that's like, so good for them.
It's awesome. Yeah, the kids coming, no doubt. Like, I let them see all of daddy's sin. Like, and when I'm wrong, I apologize. And like, that was why I wasn't a believer for 25 years, because I didn't think my granddad or my dad ever sinned. I was like, well, you got to be perfect to be a Christian. And that shit ain't me, buddy. That ain't me. And my youngins know the game. We get it. Like, when we're battling with the enemy, and son, I'm talking, this is my fights with the enemy, my prayers towards the enemy are rated R. I'm talking, I am getting nasty with that sucker. And my six-year-old is sitting right behind me, fist pumping. He's like, let's go, Dad. Tell that sucker what's up. You know, like, because that's just how I am. It's a fight to me. And in a fight, I'm angry. But we do a lot of martial arts and jiu-jitsu and stuff. And so some of the guys come from jiu-jitsu. They bring their kids, and they're in here running around and playing. And we're, like, I opened the first meeting, the first group. I gave everybody their food, and I couldn't eat because I was so freaking nervous. I don't know why, but I was. And I told those guys in there, I was like, if you sit down in here and tell me you're not effed up, you're lying. And I'm effed up. So we're going to be effed up together, boys. Let's go. Let's get to it, you know? And it just took the freaking mask smooth off of that thing. Just wham! Just everybody in there was like, okay, yeah, we're effed up. Let's go. And it's been really good. It's been really good for me. So I don't know about the other guys, but it's been really cool. So we do need to find a church, though.
That's good stuff right there.
Agreed. It sounds exactly like what you do, except for you kill them first with a workout.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, anytime you, it's so good. I'm glad you're doing that. Those guys need that stuff.
Yeah, me too. So your wife. So one last thing I want to touch on is if you're talking to a young guy that's just gotten married, I want you to lay out some things. If we apply wisdom is the wise application of failure. So what's a pothole this guy can miss to not have the first 7 years of his marriage like yours and mine?
Ask him. Then ask to me. This is, I think, the question I continue to ask men. Ask them, do you love your wife or fiance? Say yes.
Yes.
Follow up with that question. You cherish her. Like, what do you mean? Or like thinking about that. And I asked them, what's the difference between just loving your wife, cherishing your wife? So many years, I read books on what marriage should look like. And listen, I want to be the perfect husband.
What was your favorite one?
So what?
What was your favorite one?
The, oh man, what is this right there? The only thing I remember from it, to be honest with you, is what if marriage wasn't designed for holiness? What for happiness, but designed for holiness?
Is that the name of it? Or that's a quote?
From the book. The book is, see if I see it on my shelf. Author book too. I was just talking to someone about it the other day. I'll have to shoot you a message on that. But if you look at the quote, wasn't made for happiness, but holiness, a book will come up.
Okay.
You know, you listen to podcasts, you listen to sermons. And then I finally heard a pastor say, all those books and all those podcasts are probably really good information for that couple, man and his wife.
Yes.
Every woman is so different. Loving your wife simply means you're trying to do the things for her to love you back. But when you cherish your wife, you start going after her heart and understanding what she's really saying through her words.
Mm-hmm.
Life, that's a lifetime process, right? You're not going to never get that. But it's really helped me take a step back. She's angry. Instead of responding in the way I used to respond, saying, okay, I'm watching her right now. I know she's probably going through something I don't quite understand. And so I'm not going to respond flesh, but I'm going to respond out of my heart and through my love, right? Mm-hmm. But start there. Cherish your wife, not just love your wife. I think
love is a choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is not a feeling. That dies pretty fast. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at. I would say cherishing is a better descriptive word for what you have to do. And love is like this feeling that gets you to that point. But like the choice, it's a choice. What you're choosing to do it when she's angry and you're not is a choice.
Absolutely. And then the thing I would encourage couples to do is pray together. And as the man, that's your responsibility. And it might be uncomfortable, and your wife may not want to pray, and that's okay. It happens when you as a man pray out loud over your wife. And I'm not talking about, these don't have to be these long prayers. It could be, sometimes my prayers are in bed. Hey, God, thank you for getting us today. Give us good rest tonight and let us have a day easy tomorrow. And then there are some times where we're praying for, I'm praying through specific things. Lord, we have no idea what we're doing with our kid right now. Not disconnecting. Give us wisdom. Give us discernment. Lord, I pray for, we have a couple we're praying for. Pray for them, Lord, as they get to know Jesus. I pray that you open up doors for us to conversation. So some prayers are a little bit longer, but it's not like these big, intense prayers at all. I mean, our longest prayer, 2-3 minutes, that's a good prayer.
Yeah.
Right? That's a good prayer. It's like a minute long, 30 seconds long, but the power behind that. Kurt.
That came up on the last episode. Literally, my last two TikToks are me sharing my failure in not praying with my wife enough on TikTok. It's like, dude, what am I doing? Which is funny because I was on a podcast, another guy's podcast a long time ago. This has been 2.5 years ago. And I talked about the power of praying with your wife because we prayed for my firstborn son and then she was pregnant. And there's a couple other situations I used, but this is not a daily thing for me. I'm like, this is a failure as a husband and for leadership. Like the other podcast this morning was with a couple. And they were talking about how incredible it is. And I got the wife's perspective on it. It was freaking straight gut check, bro. Like God was like, do your job, son. You know, it's awesome.
That what you just said that too. My next point would be, and it takes more time to explain this one, but you as the man are responsible for this marriage. The book I did just get done reading, I wish I would have read it earlier. And I don't agree with everything in this book, but it does make some strong points. It's called Adam Loves Eve. It's written specifically for men. The idea is God's the headship over man. And so we're pulling our strength from God. And then the wives, the way they're designed, pull their strength from the man. So man, if you're not getting your strength from God, there's no way you're going to be able to lead your wife properly. And your wife is a weaker vessel. And so instead of attacking your wife for her not doing certain things, start looking at yourself internally. Like, what are you not doing? Or how are you not leading well to pull out, going back to the cherish thing? Because when your wife feels cherished, she starts opening up. But it's just this whole connection between man with God, the strength from God pours that into his wife. But when you're not connecting properly with God, now your wife is responsible for her own relationship as well. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, man, look, you're solely responsible for how your wife responds. I think earlier about sexless marriage, a quote in there along the lines of, instead of complaining about you having enough sex with your wife, how many minutes a day have you actually spent praying for your wife intently? Whole idea of like, dude, I've been guilty of it, right? Complaining about what's happening. I look at it, I'm like, man, like, am I? How do I tell you? I'm like, I can be praying more for my wife than I do. I pray for her every single day to myself, by myself. But like the book goes, like, are you on your knees with God to know her heart in a way that opens up her love for you and for her children? And for our home, being the guy that's causing her to close her heart so she can't become the woman she's designed to be. That book is a great book. It really, what was that book I read to my wife? And we just laughed because it was like scenarios we were in that I just handled so poorly.
Yeah. That's incredible. Because that my philosophy, and I adopted this many years ago. And it was always a theory until about a year and a half ago. But my theory is that I should outwork my wife times 10. And whether that's providing the house, the kids, the whole premise was make her life easy. And then it's easy to meet my needs if hers are met. Now, Jesus kind of got meshed into this over a long period of time. And this year, this past year, I've really been able to kind of refine the thought process. I had a friend of mine going through a very hard time with his wife. Like, we're talking, I ain't never heard, like, if my wife disrespected me in these ways, it would bad. Yeah. Like, it was bad, bad.
Yeah.
And so he calls me up, and this is a dear, dear, dear friend of mine, somebody I can be very forward with. And he calls me up, and he's telling me what's going on. And I just simply told him, I said, you're not working hard enough, buddy. You're not doing the job, you know? And he was like, well, I provide and I make a lot of money and blah, blah. I said, that shit don't matter. That ain't what we're talking about. And so every day for a year, he would call and we would discuss. And about 3 or 4 months ago, he had his first real conversation with his wife about their intimate life, where he was like, I was literally scared to talk about it. Like, I didn't know what to do, you know? And I was like, dude, it's working. Like, that's what we're talking about. Now, granted, when I started this process, it took my wife about 2 months to go, hey, there's really something going on. Like, what are you doing different, you know? And it took his wife a year. So he lived some sacrificial love for a long time to get to where she was like willing to meet his needs. You know what I mean? And so have you heard of Jocko Willink?
I love Jocko. I was listening to him today.
Yeah. So his approach to life, the extreme ownership deal, like applying that to your marriage is life-changing. It starts in the mirror. I posted a bunch of TikToks today. I cut that sexless marriage episode up into a bunch of shorts that are pretty vicious. Like, I had to let my wife listen to them before I posted them. I was like, hey, am I doing the most here? You know what I mean? But if you start your journey to have a better marriage with your wife, looking in the mirror and going, what can I do? And I've said it quite a few times, like, day one, week one stuff. If you're a fat, hairy, smelly piece of crap that ain't doing his job and you look like a shell of a man that you were 10 years ago, like, if you're not somebody you'd want to sleep with, let's start there. Let's start with the gym. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, I love it.
What are you supposed to do, man? Like, dang it. Who would want to sleep with you, you know? And I've been that guy. I have been that guy that hadn't put cologne on in 3 years and weighs 80 pounds more than he did when he got married. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's no good.
Yeah, good for you, man. That's awesome. It's called Sacred Marriage. That's what it's called.
Sacred. Yeah, dude. Jocko's the bomb.
Book, Discipline Equals Freedom was one of my favorite books. Read that, I don't know how many years ago, but I love the way he writes, right? You want to get up early in the morning? Then get up.
He's just like a man.
Healthy? Don't eat the donut.
Yeah, there's power in simplicity.
That's right.
For me and my brain, and that's a helpful thing. Well, Josh, tell the people where they can find you, man.
My Instagram or TikTok, Joshua_DRangel. You can find it that way, or Garage Church Fit is another way to do that. The easiest way is to find me right there.
Sweet. Perfect. Guys, look him up. I follow him on TikTok, and his stuff is awesome. There's just something so motivating about watching people who are getting after it. It's just a good thing. And if you, what you fill your brain with and what you watch on those deals is very important. And I just commend everybody who is putting out good stuff, because there's so much freaking garbage. And so the hope and what I found, Josh, is with this podcast is that the people that I'm running into on here or that are listening are the men that have come to the end of themselves and they're searching for something. Like, I don't know what, but something's wrong with me. And it's Jesus, but there's some real practical truth in other people's stories. And I sure do appreciate you sharing that, man. It helps more people than you know. It really does. So guys, as always, Dalton@310EDU is my email. If you need me, look me up. 310EDU.com is where you can find my phone number if you need that. Please reach out. If you need help, go check out the artofsufferingpodcast.com. If you want to support the podcast, we got blogs on there and episodes and stuff. You can check us out there. Josh, thanks for coming on, man. And we will see you guys in the next episode.
Okay, bud.
You bet.